This is The Thing About Cars, and we're so excited for this episode because we have Stephanie Stuckey with us, who is the CEO of Stuckey's Corporation. So we're going to have an incredible on-the-road adventure. But first, let me tell you, we've got a full house and all of our co-hosts around the table. And let me introduce everybody. Dave, Polly, are you there?
I am here today.
Excellent. Ben Lauer, how about you?
I'm here.
Amanda Payton.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Mickey Desai.
How you doing?
And finally, of course, Stephanie Stuckey, who we'll get into in a little bit. This is going to be a special episode. We've got someone that really is invested in seeing that road tripping and having that road experience is happening. So we're going to take this in a little bit different direction. And at some point along the way, we're going to try to stump some of us, especially Ben, about some cars. So Stephanie, let me get started with you. We are longtime friends. We have known each other for decades now, and
years,
yes, exactly. But you know, one of the things that is our passion is the environment. That is something that we really resonate with. And so I want to get started with your vision of Stuckey's and move right into what you're thinking about electric vehicles and EV stations in the future. So go ahead and tell us where this has brought you to at this point.
Sure, I'd be happy to. And thank you for having me on the show. I'm looking forward to a lively discussion, not only about cars, but about road trips. And that is really Stuckey's mission, is to make road trips fun. And I like to say we were the OG of road trips. Mm-hmm. We started in 1937 as a roadside stand in Eastman, Georgia, selling pecans. That was my grandfather's stand. And he grew from that to 368 stores in over 40 states along every major interstate. And we are synonymous with the road trip. Unfortunately, our business fell out of family hands for decades. And we really peaked when the road trip peaked, and then we plummeted when the road trip declined. So my grandfather sold the stores in the mid 60s. And then shortly after he sold the stores, the oil embargo happened in the 1970s. We had the Airline Deregulation Act, so air travel was cheaper, and people were not going on the road as much. It was just a complete change in the way Americans traveled. And so we lost so much of the magic of Stuckey's when it fell into corporate hands. We had several corporations own the company. My father got it back in 1985. He managed to stop the hemorrhaging and keep the company alive. He retired like a decade ago. And then I got the company in November of 2019. I bought the company from my dad and his former partners. So The reason I tell all that story is because I bought the company as is. And that means there was a lot of mess that had happened, and I'm trying to clean it up. We do not own or operate any of our stores. And that is one of our biggest challenges. So when I think about what my vision for the future of Stuckey's is, it is that we are going to grow the company. We've made it profitable by selling our merchandise and our pecan products. We just bought a candy plant and a pecan shelling plant. So we're really driving revenue and growth that way. And as we gain in capacity, then we're going to be looking at having Stuckey stores, standalone stores that are corporate owned that we can control. But right now, the 20 brick and mortar stores that are out there that have the Stuckey's brand, we don't control them. Oh. So in answer to your question about EVs, we are not in a position right now to put EVs in, but that is part of my bigger dream. And I have this whole concept of having Stuckey's really as a wonderful destination location, having only a handful of stores, but they're really going to be amazing. So yeah, I'll stop there because that's a long answer, but hopefully it gives you an idea of where we are and what we're looking to do.
And a beautifully concise story, because it's all about your brand. It is about that memory, that, you know, that tactile experience that you have embodied and you're trying to bring back. Tell me a little bit more about the challenges with EV stations, because I know we touched on that a bit.
Yeah. So I don't think people realize that C-store industry is really tough and the margins are tight. So it's hard to be profitable. And Stuckey's is kind of in that C-store category. I push back against it some, and I like to say we are a C-store, we're a candy store, but we're more than a candy store. We really are sort of this road trip destination place. And being on the side of the road and being in the gas business, it's those margins are hard, and it's very difficult to get our franchise owners to buy into getting EV charging stations. They have to invest money in those chargers, which frankly, they really don't have the upfront capital for. What's interesting in the gas business is the gas companies pay for the oil tanks. They'll often pay for the canopies. They'll pay for upgrades. They will often pay for your signage. So the EV companies right now, it's just really challenging unless there's some upfront capital that the EV companies can bring to the table. The only company I'm aware of that does pay upfront is Tesla. And we are actually talking with Tesla. I've connected them with a couple of our locations and the owners of those locations. And hopefully we will have Tesla at a couple of Stuckey's. They have to be within their charging network. So because of the expenses involved, Tesla is very mindful. They're only going to put in chargers that are in what they call a charging desert. And we have a couple of locations that do align with that. So until they can get the pricing down or come up with a business model that will make it affordable, it's really hard to convince some of these franchise owners. And layer that on top of quite a few of our franchise owners may own their building. I mean, they rent their building. So you have to convince a landlord on top of the franchisee. So there's several layers of trying to get people to buy into EVs.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. Ben, I remember you saying that, is it GM that's going electric in 5 or 10 years totally?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
And so I love it. And I'm an EV driver. So this is something I am passionate about. It's just sometimes you get hit with the cold, hard reality of making things happen. And we're definitely working towards that goal, but these are some of the challenges that we face.
And Dawn, just to further underline this, Audi just announced that they were not going to invest any more money into their internal combustion research.
So hopefully when you have demand, you're going to see a lot of your franchisees, you know, and your owners try really bring that to the table, because then it'll be profitable for them, or they'll see that those people need to stop by and use all of their wonderful things inside the store.
It totally makes sense, because typically a charge is going to take anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour. And so during that time, people can be in your store spending money. But the reality right now is, last I checked, it was 4% of American drivers are driving electric. So we need to make some more strides in getting more people on the road with electric vehicles and getting that comfort and taking road trips in an EV, which I do all the time, and it's totally doable. Yep. You just have to map your route.
And then, of course, the next step is getting solar panels on Stuckey roofs.
But again, see, you have to own your building. Yeah. So it gets challenging unless you own and operate. So for us, the real solution to get a lot of the change I want to see happen, you have to own your stores. Yeah. And then you totally control what happens. And so that's my vision for the future of Stuckey stores, is owning and operating. But we're not there yet.
So let's talk about, you know, one of the other parts of that vision is people driving these older cars and they want to meet up places. What are you thinking? There might be some existing places out there.
Exactly. And we talked about this earlier. I would absolutely love to see, especially as the COVID restrictions are being lifted and more people are getting on the road and discovering how much fun it is to road trip, we welcome having car enthusiasts come to Stuckey's and have swap meets and have opportunities to bring your car, show them off, talk cars, exchange information. And so that's an open invitation. I do know several of our franchisees have committed to me that they would love that. They just need connection. So anyone listening, reach out to me. We've got a store in Alabama. We've got one in Mississippi, one in South Carolina that I know would be interested.
Yeah, that's exciting.
We should actually, I mean, amongst the six of us and our two listeners, we should probably organize a thing about cars gathering at one of these locations. I think that would be kind of fun.
Yeah, Perry, Georgia. Oh,
yeah.
My mom and my nephew co-own that location. So I have some pretty good ties with those owners. And that's a great location. It's got a good size yard. It's right there. All of these are at the interstate. Yeah. And so easy access, and I will personally commit to giving free pecan snacks and log rolls to all the participants.
Oh man, see, now I'm craving a pecan roll.
I'm in now.
I was saying, take
giving out free stuff.
Take that Lotus down there, Ben.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Yeah, that sounds great. Hey guys, before we move into a next topic, what are some of the questions you have for Stephanie?
Well, I want to know if Stephanie knows her pecan trivia.
I know some. Now, here's the smart thing I did.
Yes.
Was 6 months after buying Stuckey's, I realized I cannot run this company alone. I need help, especially if I was going to invest in a manufacturing facility. I need a little help running that. So I have a partner, and my business partner is a third generation pecan farmer.
Oh, cool.
So he is my expert. Whenever I have questions, I just text RG and he knows the answer. Right. But shoot, I fire a question at me, see if I know the answer.
I just have a couple that sort of fit our old format of trivia here on the show. And I just have to ask them, put these nuts in order of United States consumption from greatest to least.
Okay.
On the list of nuts here are pecans, peanuts, almonds, and hazelnuts. So
I object to the question on the front because peanut is not a nut. It is a legume.
It's a legume. That is true.
And if you look in the USDA reports on nut consumption, does not include the peanut because it does not count as a tree nut.
Correct.
It's in the ground. So I'm just saying I have issues with that, but it would be almond, pecan, hazelnut.
Close. No, you got it right, Stephanie. You got it absolutely right. Yeah. Almonds are, two-thirds of the nuts consumed in the U.S. are peanuts, the legumes. Almonds are next at 13%, followed by pecans at 4%. And I don't have the percentage for hazelnuts, but
I'm not listing peanuts on that one.
No, so. I agree. I completely agree.
What's the other word for hazelnut?
The other, I know this one. You guys know the other one?
Other what?
The other word for hazelnut?
Oh. Gilbert.
Bilbert.
Ben got it. Also called a cob nut. That is correct.
Yep. I had no idea, and I can't stand them, except for when they're made into something.
I have two more.
Nutella.
Right.
Yes. Nutella.
I have two more. Pecans are rich in vitamin E, usually ranked in the top 15 of all antioxidant-rich foods. Which state adopted the pecan tree as its state tree in 1919? Was it Alabama, South Carolina, Tennessee, or Texas?
Ooh, Alabama, Texas, and Louisiana all have the pecan as their state tree. So I'm just trying to figure out which one would have come first. And Louisiana, I can eliminate because you didn't have that on your list. I'm going to say Texas was first.
You are absolutely correct. Texas is actually the state pecan tree and the state nut of Texas overall. And I believe we have a late governor who actually stipulated he wanted to be buried underneath the pecan tree. So you are absolutely right. Texas is it.
And you know, Lyndon Johnson grew pecan trees.
Oh.
And once a year, you can go to the Johnson Ranch and they have pecan day at the ranch. It's right around Thanksgiving and you can collect all the pecans are free that day.
That's amazing.
And
of course,
by the way, I have worked with my representatives in the legislature. We are working to make Georgia's state nut the pecan.
That's cool.
Yes.
That would be cool.
It passed the Senate. It's in the House now.
Right. So my last question isn't really trivia. It's mostly to start internal strife and warfare. Is it pronounced pecan or pecan?
Well, do you know there's actually four ways to pronounce it?
What? Four?
Yes. Can one come up with the four ways? See, I'm coming right back at you with more trivia.
Yeah, you are.
What are the four ways to pronounce it?
I only know pecan and pecan and pecan. That's it.
Okay. Pecan, 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 pecan.
Oh.
Huh.
And all are considered correct. There is no correct pronunciation.
They're all correct. Pecan is more correct than the other four.
I like pecan.
So I'm an equal opportunity pronouncer. I kind of flip back and forth.
Yes.
70% of Americans say pecan. Mm. I say pecan. Like 80% of the time. But sometimes if I'm saying pecan pie, I don't know, it just seems to flow better.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I agree.
And I've heard what my grandfather would say is it's pecan when you pick them and pecan when you sell them.
Ah. You know, I think the orchards are beautiful. I love seeing the orchards. Anytime I drive South Georgia, just seeing a pecan, whatever. It's beautiful. I just think they're very majestic trees.
They are. And Georgia is the number one pecan producing state in the entire country. There's some 18 states that produce the nut, and we have been number one since the 1950s. Yet we're the peach state, and we're number four in peach production.
Yeah, right. And South Carolina, it does more peaches than we do. It's kind of
so unfair. And California too kicks our peach ass. We are the pecan state, and I don't know why we're not shouting about that. Because I'm not just saying this because I'm in the pecan business. Our pecans from Georgia taste so much better. I just did a cross-country trip, and of course, I bought pecans. I went to several pecan farms and bought pecans in New Mexico and Texas, and they make a good nut. But Georgia's are buttery.
They are. They're sweeter and buttery. Yes. Yes.
It's like the Vidalia onion, right? Which is grown in sort of the same area.
Oil.
There is something about Georgia's red clay soil and our humid environment. I mean, we just produce the most delicious nut, and we make them in the most quantity. And it's the healthiest nut, and it is America's native nut. It's the only snack nut native to this country, unless you want to count the filbert, which I do not snack on.
No, I don't think anybody snacks on that thing.
And the black walnut too. So, you know, whenever I say, oh, the pecan's a, you know, only native snack nut, I always get the black walnut and the filbert crowd. I'm like, no. When was the last time you really snack on those nuts?
Right.
Nope, not at all.
I'm just saying it's America's native nut.
Yep.
And we all need to be munching on them because they are delicious and healthy.
And healthy. That's right.
And Stucky's is now making them at our shelling plant, and it was so yummy. We've got like 20 different toppings that we'll be rolling out.
Wow.
You'll be seeing on your shelves very soon in grocery aisles across this country.
I can't
wait. Snack aisles.
Yeah.
That's very cool. And what do you do with all the shells,
Mike?
Right now we are selling them for a very modest profit. Like, we're not making much money off of it, but to a paper processing plant in Augusta, Georgia, and they use it for energy production.
But I wondered about that.
So the shells can be used for bioenergy, and then we are experimenting using them for mulch, and we just donated mulch to a nonprofit that you know, Dawn, but I don't want to say until we decide if it works, but it's an environmental nonprofit that wants to see if they can use our mulch for fertilizing.
Wow, that's very cool. I think I know which one it is. That's really fun. Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned talking about where you were at when Stucky's was founded in the 1930s and then transition. What do you think was the best decade? I usually do a Dawn Drives the Decade little summit. So when do you think Stucky's was at its heyday?
So I'm a little biased because this is when I was growing up in the 1970s and taking that classic American road trip that so many of us probably remember if you were in your 40s or 50s in the Woody station wagon. I was thrown in the back because I'm number four or five kids. We had no air conditioning. Car seats were completely unheard of when I was a baby, and like, we never wore seatbelts, and it was fun. And we stopped at Stucky's. So even though Stucky's at that point was no longer in family hands, my grandfather actually remained very active and involved in Stucky's for about 7 years after he sold. They made him head of the Stucky's division of the company that bought Stucky's. So he was still involved. The family was still engaged, and we stopped. So I think that's one thing that's different about my childhood road trips. I hear from a lot of people who say they were always screaming to have their parents stop. And a lot of times they would just drive on by and they never got a pecan log roll. We always stopped. And the Stucky family, we stopped at every Stucky's. Sometimes we would stop for an hour. Like, there were no quick stops. My dad would walk around. He'd talk to people. We knew a lot of the managers and owners still. And so I think those, that 1970s era. And I remember going into Stucky's, we used to have talking mina birds. We had, I mean, they would come, they would talk to you. I mean, it was so much fun. We had a couple of the stores had beehives and made honey on site.
Wow.
Wow.
We had all those vending coin-operated amusement machines, the rocking horses and little cars. It was just, it was an experience. Yes. It was fun. Of course, all the great souvenirs.
Yes.
You just went on a road trip and you, I know on your LinkedIn page, we're talking about things that were big.
Yes. That,
you know, what did, when you, and you went, you did 60 Route 66 and you went California to all the way back here to Atlanta?
Not this road trip, but I have done Route 66. I've yet to do the entire expanse. By the way, I have my t-shirt here. This is from our store on Route 66 in Doolittle, Missouri.
Oh, that's cool. So it's anybody, you know,
the world's largest rocking chair.
That's listening to us. Yeah, the world's largest rocking chair. I saw that you had done
that. Yeah, that's in Cuba, Missouri.
Wow. Anything else that you've seen that's people just need to get out and take a look?
I'm always fascinated by the things that don't normally make the guidebooks that really pull you into small town America. And of course, I love things that are just right off the road. So roadside Americana. I think there's something unique about this country, about people who just decide that they're going to build a giant UFO welcome center in their backyard. And literally, I have been to a giant UFO welcome center. And there was a guy in Bluffington, South Carolina, who just started collecting buttons, like you sew on your clothes buttons. He was an insomniac, and he started sewing buttons on everything in the middle of the night when he couldn't sleep. And before you knew it, he had everything just covered in buttons, and he has a button museum, and it's in the middle of a cornfield.
Wow.
You got to give him credit for, you know, find a way to make OCD profitable.
Right?
Yes.
But only in America. Like, how great is that? So I love that stuff. And that to me is fun. And civic pride, you know, the small town America that has the world's largest hammer and the world's largest brick and ball of twine. That stuff is really fun to me.
Are you familiar with Roadside America, the website?
Yes. And in fact, I have talked to there are two men who were college roommates who founded it. And I've been in touch with one of the founders. I'm addicted to that site.
Yeah, me too. I do a lot of business travel. And a lot of times when I have time to kill in different parts of the country, I'll whip out Roadside America and go, let's see what's around.
Yeah. And they have an app.
Yeah.
I love their app. I've been posting my own stuff, and I've got actually a couple of things I want to submit to them. So Doug Kirby is the man I've been in touch with, who's one of the co-founders, and they're so cool. I just love what they do.
Oh yeah.
You know, Stephanie, we usually ask people, our guests, some standard questions, and I'm going to take a little different approach to that. What car do you want to own to do these road trips in?
Oh, I would love the newest Tesla. So I have a Model S, but it's old. So I'd like the latest version of the Model S that has, I think now the mileage is up to like 400 and something miles
and
per charge. And my Tesla right now is like 180 per charge. I bought it used and I've been driving it a lot. So the battery's diminishing. So that's what I would like to have.
And another question is, what is the strangest thing, and I'm going to say, you've seen on the road? We usually say in someone's house or garage, but what's the strangest thing? I mean, the button thing sounds really strange, but what else?
I have to say the UFO, because that was just weird. And it was made out of found objects. The guy lived in a trailer right next to it. And he was for real serious that this was going to be the welcoming for extraterrestrial. Like, so talking, it's not just the attractions, but it's the people around the attractions.
Mm-hmm.
Another really interesting one, and now I'm forgetting the name of the town, but it's a small town in South Carolina. I was driving with a couple of friends and we had driven through like four towns and they were all dead. I mean, just really almost ghost towns. And then we went to this one town that was like totally hopping. All the downtown was alive and they had this great coffee shop. And we went into the coffee shop. It was a tea room coffee shop restaurant. And the lady that owned it had been renovated. It was like a 1910 built general store. They've been renovated to this coffee shop. And I asked the woman about the town, and she said, well, me and my friends, we just got tired of all our towns around here drying up when the economy went bad and like during the real estate crash. So we just banded together and we brought back this coffee house. And next thing you knew, the whole town started reviving, like this little town in the middle of nowhere. And so it's stories like that. That's why you want to go travel America. And you don't get that in New York City. Yeah.
No, not at all.
I'm not bashing the city. I love visiting cities, but there's something special. And there's something special about the people who like to take those kind of trips.
Exactly.
And I've joined. So you talked about Roadside America. There's also the Society for Commercial Architecture, which I really don't think the name describes what they're about, but they are about preserving the architecture of Roadside America.
Awesome.
And there's also Road Arc, A-R-C-H, Arch, roadarch.com website that documents all the beautiful, like mid-mod Gucci architecture of these wonderful motels with the neon signs and track them. So there's like this whole subculture of people that are also driving cars, right? Usually they're in the car too, that are exploring these fun roadside places.
Nice. Mickey, did I miss I think we had a third question, but now I'm blanking on it.
The third question is, where is your next road trip?
Ah, yes.
Well, you know, what I love to do is take short road trips and make road trips out of things that you normally wouldn't think of. So I am getting my COVID vaccine tomorrow in Alamo, Georgia. And so I've mapped out a couple places I want to visit while I'm headed down there. There's Hamlin Hills in Forsyth, Georgia, which is this really cool roadside place. And I'm actually talking with the owner about selling some Stuckey's products. So hopefully I can convince him. And then I also want to go, Alamo, Georgia has this really amazing sci-fi looking bank that is, it's called the Jetsons Bank. And it was built in 1966. And it's just this beautiful monument. And so I want to visit that. And then I love Macon. So I might pull over and do the whole Allman Brothers graveyard, because that's pretty cool. Their gravestones are pretty cool. People
you know, actually
some stuff.
People don't know this, but Macon off of the almost the last exit before you, let me think of where it's at. When you're going down 75, there's an exit on that area that is the most winning gas station for lottery tickets.
Wow. Oh, I got to go there.
Yeah.
It's like for that. I'm adding that one.
Yeah. It's cool. Really, it's like sort of like when you turn, I'll have to get the exact one, but when you're downtown Macon, it's almost like you're downtown and you're about to get back on and go down 75. So I'll have to remember which exit that is. But yeah,
it might be near that Krispy Kreme. They have a great Krispy Kreme donut in Macon.
Yes, I think it's either there or the next one down. And they also have some great barbecue places in downtown.
Yeah, and New Way Wiener. Oh. Talk about really cool businesses. That place is amazing.
I've heard about this place.
Yeah, they have bright red hot dogs.
Yeah.
I don't want to ask what's in them, but...
FDNC number 40.
And I'm a vegetarian, but they are pretty cool.
So Stephanie, you have some... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mickey.
No, I mean, you reminded me of something, another bit of trivia that I had brought up. And Dawn, tell me to shut this down in any minute. But what city holds the world record for the largest pecan pie, pecan cookie, and pecan brownie? The same city holds all three records.
Oh, my gosh. I do not know. Okay, so I'm just going to... I'm going to say somewhere in Georgia because I love Georgia. And Albany likes to lay claim to being the pecan capital of the world. So I'm going to say Albany, Georgia.
It is. Anyone else have a guess before we go there?
Albany, Georgia.
Albany.
Nobody? Dave, nothing. Amanda, you got anything? Okay. So it's actually Okmulgee, Oklahoma. Okmulgee, Oklahoma has the world record. The town used to hold an annual pecan festival each June, but they stopped doing it in 2009. So
Oklahoma grows a lot of pecans.
But the world's largest pecan pie has my intrigue there. I'm like, really? What did they do?
Stumped me.
Yeah. Sorry, Stephanie.
Pecan pie came from Cairo syrup, though, which is based in Georgia.
Yeah. From Cairo, Georgia?
Yes.
Oh, but it's spelled differently.
The Roddenberry family from Cairo, Georgia, they made the Cairo syrup that is the corn syrup that is the key ingredient in pecan pie. Yep. And the reason pecan pie came about was the recipe was printed on the syrup label to drive sales. Now, and the recipe just took off.
For our listeners out there, even though we say Cairo, it's spelled Cairo.
Right.
So that's right.
For those of you out there out west, you know, it's spelled Cairo, but we have a lot of that. We have a Houston County that's spelled like Houston.
It's a unique aspect of Georgian English is that something may be spelled Swanee but pronounced Lawrenceville.
Right. Or Vienna, Georgia.
Yeah, Vienna.
Vienna, Georgia. Albany. Yep.
Mm-hmm. We have, and it's, I think it's really fun. I like that it's colloquial or that way. Right. So now talking about stumping, I understand you have some photos that we will post on our various social media sites, but let's see if you can stump us on some cars in the Stuckey parking lots.
I am ready to try to stump. All right. So I have lots and lots of car pictures. Can y'all see this?
Not
sharing
it. Okay.
Yep. All right. I can see it. So, all right, hold on. Let me do share screen. Oh, here we go.
Oh, yes.
There we go. Here it comes.
Let me do, I think you can do presentation mode.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay. All right, here we go. Can y'all identify the cars in these pictures?
Oh, my goodness.
One of them for sure.
Yeah.
The two-door one closer to the building is a Studebaker. Probably a 50
notes because I don't know these.
I can't make out enough detail of the yellow one, but the kind of greenish one is a 53 Studebaker.
Yeah.
Ooh, got the year too.
And the yellow one is clearly American. I mean, it would have to be anyway, but I don't know. What do you think about those headlights, Ben? That kind of says Chevy to me, but I'm not sure.
I'm thinking Chevy.
Yeah.
Well, those are tail lights because it's facing away from the camera.
Right.
Well, the one that's just barely peeking in.
No, the tail lights. Did I say headlights? I meant tail lights.
Yeah. I say there is a yellow car that's just got like a headlight and a third of the front bumper visible in the frame that does kind of look like a Chevy.
Yeah.
There's also a black one hiding in the trees back there.
Oh, that black one hiding in the trees look like it's from the 1940s. Yeah, that's right. I mean, that looks like something from the 40s. Who knows? There you go. Yeah. We did our best there. What's the next one?
All right. I do know this store was the second store my grandfather built post-World War II. So that's a 53 Studebaker is interesting. So this would have been an older photo, this building that probably was built around 1950. Uh-huh. Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
This is Eastman, Georgia.
I think the purple one, maybe a Hudson.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe, although I'm kind of thinking Ford too, though.
Hold on, I have to get my cat in.
I feel like I've seen those lines on the green thing before, but I can't really remember where.
Yeah. I'll tell you this much. If I were to post all these in the Unloved Autos Facebook group, you'd have them all identified in a matter of hours.
Well, when we make this
Love it.
Episode live, we will have to draw them to our page and get them to play that game.
Yeah,
absolutely. Exactly.
Yeah.
That purple car is just gorgeous.
Yeah.
That would be so much fun to drive. Okay, ready for the next one?
Hit it.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Oh. This is more modern.
70s. Plymouth, maybe?
Oldsmobile. No.
It's GM, yeah. It's either Olds or Pontiac, but I can't see the detail.
Olds or Pontiac, okay.
It's a Cutlass, maybe?
Maybe.
Yeah. Oops.
Going too fast. Okay. This is probably 70s, maybe? Yeah. Maybe close to 80s even?
Oh, totally. And the one on the left, the red, is one of those, either it's a Vega or a Gremlin.
I think that's an AMC Gremlin.
Nope.
That's a Gremlin? No. Yeah, nope. I was going to say.
Volkswagen. Nope.
It's a VW.
Yeah, it's
is it?
Yeah, my mom had two of them. That's what we called a rabbit in the United States or a golf in the rest of the world. Yeah,
I remember those.
Oh yeah,
yeah, VW rabbit.
Yep. The one on the blue one on the right, I think, is a town car.
Yeah, it's a Lincoln of some sort, Continental Mark something.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Looks like a two door, so it's not going to be a town car. Hmm.
Where is
my grandmother's car
with the mountains in the back?
You know, I am not sure where this one is, but probably Colorado. It could also be New Mexico or Arizona. We have a ton of stores in New Mexico and Arizona.
Oh, wow.
Back in the day. Now we have none.
I'm pretty sure the one in the middle was a Chevy, by the way.
I think actually it's a Caprice or an Impala.
Yeah, I think you're right. The three lenses on each side is an Impala thing.
Uh-huh.
All right, so this is a painting. Oh, and the little arrows, I put the arrows in because my grandfather is, the arrow on the left is pointing that my grandfather had himself painted into this painting. And then on the right, that's his executive assistant, his secretary.
Yeah.
And I feel pretty confident that Elva Lee like commissioned the painting and helped like coordinate with the artist and then made sure she was in it.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah. But I figure y'all might be, this hangs in my living room. So I'd love to know what the cars are.
To my eye, the red one and the brown one look like just sort of vague American-ish cars. I don't think the artist did anything exact with them.
Word Thunderbird keeps coming to my mind, but I don't know if that's...
Yeah, there's a little bit of resemblance there, yeah. Now, the little yellow one that we can see poking out between the brown car and the little boy's head is definitely British. That's, you know, something along the lines of a TR3, probably.
Ooh, so cool.
Yeah, very cool.
My brother drove a TR3. So cute.
Maybe that's why it's in there.
Right? I love this picture. These ladies are just like the original Thelma and Louise. They're so cute.
That is awesome.
I know this car and it's driving me crazy.
I think it's a Chevy. And
but see how...
Yeah.
I mean, see how the wheel covers are in the back?
Yep.
You think it's a Chevy?
I don't think so.
Could be wrong.
But something with a long name, because I can tell it's got a lot of chrome letters on its back.
It's not a Chrysler Imperial, is it?
I don't think so.
That was a huge car, and this one has not a very huge car. Yeah.
Yeah.
This looks big to me, though. It looks like they're riding a boat.
Yeah.
You know, like a D-52 song. You know, they're riding a boat.
Yeah.
Riding a car as big as a boat.
Oh, my God.
This is old.
Don't show that to my wife. She's going to want one.
What is it?
Cool. As a Dodge Rambler?
Could be.
It could be.
Yeah, you love that one.
Yeah.
All right. We're getting near the end.
Trans Am right there in the front in red.
Yeah.
Isn't that cute? Yeah. And of course, I had to make sure there was at least one Woody station wagon in this series.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Look at
there's
that.
Another station wagon. Classic Americana. Just me saying we're all about the road trip.
Yep.
And that picture on the lower right was actually at a Stuckey's. They're the Stuckey's in Johnston City, Illinois, has a statuary. Oh. And they have Venus de Milo replica at the Stuckey store.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So there's lots of culture.
Lots of culture. Yeah. Lots Stuckey's. Of pure Americana there. That's true. That's fantastic. Yes. Thank you, Stephanie.
Yeah. Thank you. So
I want to give everybody a chance to ask Stephanie a question as we're starting to wrap up. Amanda, do you want to, what's, I know something's been burning in your mind.
I actually do not have any questions today. She's done a pretty good job of covering the things that I would have asked.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Amanda, how do you feel about pecan logs?
When I was a kid, one of our fundraisers in school was to sell various candies, and there was a pecan log.
Yeah.
And I wanted it so badly that I ended up eating it, despite the fact that it was sold to someone else. And I got in trouble because my mom had to buy another one for the person who had bought it. So I'm a fan.
Thank you. Yeah, we're actually getting back in the fundraising business.
Oh, cool.
Awesome. Yeah.
The pecan company we bought has a fundraising business attached to it. So we acquired the fundraising business along with the manufacturing facility. So we will be doing mostly pecans, but I would love to also do pecan log rolls and make a great fundraiser.
Yeah.
Who else? Questions? I know we have questions.
Actually, what I'd like to hear about is the pecan beer that you were mentioning about earlier.
Yeah, if it were later in the day, I'd be drinking that instead of my soda. But it was a wonderful partnership with our friends at Wild Heaven Brewery in Atlanta. And they actually got, you know, we sent them, I can't remember how many pounds, but there's like pounds and pounds of Stuckey's roasted and milled pecans. So they put pecan meal in the beer.
Wow.
Nice.
And they also added just a touch of vanilla and hints of maraschino cherries, dried cherries.
Yes, please.
Yeah. And a little bit, little sweet, but not cloyingly so.
Yeah.
Where can I get this?
Wild Heaven.
I was so worried at the beer launch that I wouldn't like it and I would have to put on a game face. And I was so relieved. It really is good. Having said that, it's a brown ale. It's a thicker ale, and it does have a sweetness to it. So it's more of a dessert beer. I wouldn't necessarily drink like two or three of them in a row. It's like one beer after a meal kind of thing, like a port wine.
Yep.
But it's yummy. And they've gone through two batches. And I think they need to have a third batch.
Yeah, I think they do too.
Our friends at Wild Heaven Brewery, the thing about cars is available for celebrity endorsements of your products.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'd love that.
I have one last question, but I don't want to steal Ben's thunder if he's got anything.
Not really. More just a comment that I'm excited to see what develops.
Yeah. So
I'm really looking forward to it. And I will definitely be hitting up some Stuckies on the road out there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
My very simple question is, I read that your grandmother was the person who made the first pecan log rolls. Is that correct?
Yes. Ethel.
Yeah. And was there cherry involved in the pecan log as well? Like in the nougat?
Yes.
Okay. So
that's
always
been our secret ingredient. And I'm actually named after her. My name is Ethel Stephanie Stuckey.
Oh.
I've just always gone by Stephanie, but I love the name Ethel. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But here's the kind of dark secret about the family recipe, that Ethel's pecan log roll recipe.
Yeah.
And I knew my grandmother very well. I was in my, 30s when she passed. And she was very protective of that recipe. So much so that whenever she gave it out and shared it, which she did, she shared the recipe, she would always change it up just a little bit. She would add an ingredient, or she would take away an ingredient, or she would add a step, but there was something different every time she shared that recipe.
Nice.
And she actually took the original recipe to her grave.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
I know.
Wow.
But having said that, we have used the same recipe for decades, and it is true to Ethel's original recipe, but that absolute, like every teaspoon correct, she took it to her grave, Ethel.
Oh my goodness.
I called her Big Mama.
Yeah. And Stephanie, we really got to talk about what your standard is for a deep, dark secret. Deep, dark secret is that the original pecan logs used heroin.
Yeah, I guess I should be fortunate that I consider myself very fortunate that is our secret. Yeah. And I've told it, so I don't know if it's a secret anymore.
Right.
Still delicious.
All of our listeners are sworn to secrecy now.
Yes.
Yes.
But I want the listeners to help me with the mystery of the cars.
Yeah.
It's yes.
Awesome to post what the cars are when I use these photos in our social media. Yep. So if y'all can help unlock those mysteries and identify the cars. And I would love, if anyone wants to reach out to me, I'm very easy to find. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, YouTube.
Yes.
So find me, message me. My email address is on my LinkedIn contacts.
Yep.
And if you're interested in helping with the swap meet for cars, yep, I'm all about it.
We'll definitely have to make that happen.
Yeah,
we'll crowdsource that and get you a complete compendium of all the answers. What do you, as we're starting to wrap up, what do you think is, you can hear your passion, but what do you think is driving you every day?
I think it's that what I'm doing is unique. I feel like I'm uniquely suited to help revive this company. And everyone loves a comeback. In my opinion, that is the greatest story ever told, is a comeback story.
Yeah.
And I don't know any other nostalgic brand that's like Stuckey's that has fallen out of family hands. Now that happens all the time. Taken over by a corporation and the brand became something completely different, usually not for the better, in my opinion. But the family never gets the brand back.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this chance to not only revive Stuckey's, which obviously I care about, it's my grandfather's company and my father as well, but it's the road trip.
Yeah.
So I really see that's what I'm about, is making road trips fun again.
Yeah.
And if it's promoting a product, the product is all centered around the road trip. It's that story of getting on the highway and exploring and pulling over and taking the exit. And I want every time you see our product on a display, and by the way, all of our displays are going to be road trip centric. Our display box looks like a billboard. We have another display that has a classic Stuckey's blue roof that's sloped.
Mm-hmm.
And so it looks like a little Stuckey store. So everything we do revolves around adventure and fun and the road trip.
Yeah.
And that's really exciting to me. That's a fun thing to wake up every day wanting to just move that road trip vision a little further.
Yep. Part of my own personal goals around what it means to be coming out on the other side of pandemic is to take the opportunity not to return to normal. And to me, that means reaching out and getting back in touch with the country again. And
I love that.
And so that's important to me. And I'm glad to see that you're in there making those kinds of things happen for other people. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you. This has been so amazing. I think it's important for all of us as we're grappling with so many different changes to find those value adds and find those nuggets of pieces that really add to our lives. So thank you, Stephanie, for bringing that all to us and telling us about your story and how we can be part of it. Because I think that's the other piece, is when you're road tripping, you know, I was at a little roadside plant place that has a kind of a general store feel on the inside. And in the window was a Stuckey's and then a display of Stuckey items. Here. And I thought, oh my gosh, there it is. There she is. She's making a difference. And
that's what we're doing. That's how we're bringing the company back.
Yep. Yeah. That's so exciting. So,
Thank you.
As we wrap up here, I want to thank you for your time and really everybody, you can follow Stephanie on Facebook. You can follow Stuckey's on LinkedIn. She gives an incredible account of where she's at and provides a lot of history, which I think is the other piece that is exciting, is she goes back and she really does think about what's happening at the time. When you talk about 70s, what was happening to cars at the time, things where there was a lot of talk about emissions and all of that. And then bringing that full circle to where we're looking to the future of electric vehicles. So it's nice that you've got that longevity, as cars do. And cars, those of us around the table are so passionate about. So I think we're ready to close out and thank you for being here. And thanks guys and gals for hanging out with us. And the thing about cars is really about the experience. And, you know, that's why we love our vehicles. And hopefully we'll all get to do an EV trip someday. I think that would be really fun to go from Stuckey's to Stuckey's.
Yep.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Yep.
It's been my pleasure.
Thanks, everybody.
See y'all on the road.
Yeah.
And we'll sign off. Thanks, everybody. And this is the thing about cars. You can follow us, like us. Make sure that the more you like us, we can get on the various podcasts. We're out there, but we need one more Apple Podcast for a lot of likes. So thank you. This is Dawn signing off, and everybody else, Ben and Dave and Amanda and Mickey. And thanks, Stephanie, for being with us. This is the thing about cars.
See you on the road.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.